Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or simply hoping to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and PsychReg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall. In the article we're going to discuss today, there's a great line in the very first paragraph, and it comes from a TED Talk.
Oh, yeah.
And it says, everything you need to know about addiction is wrong.
Right. And the TED Talk was done by a journalist.
Right.
You know, it made me think of Paul Tough, you know, wrote this wonderful book about how children succeed. Right. Or Alfie Cohen, you know, he's a journalist. They're journalists by trade. And so this is a TED Talk, which I have not seen.
I
will be watching later today.
Right.
Because of this notion that everything we know about addiction is wrong.
Right.
Okay.
And this article is a little bit older, but it fits very well with the theme of our podcast this week. And that is, you know, the idea that, you know, addiction isn't necessarily a chemical problem. There's a lot of research that suggests that it's a social problem.
I think we've struggled with addiction. I don't know what the addiction literature was like in the 1800s.
Right.
But I know we've struggled with it in the 1900s.
Mm-hmm.
And of course it led to prohibition and so all the change in our federal laws, and then that had to be rescinded. But we've struggled with addiction over the last few years. Of course, it most famously treated through the Alcoholics Anonymous program, which some people agree with and some people don't. But we've really struggled with what causes addiction.
Right.
Okay. And recently, when I say recently, I'm probably talking from the 1970s on, we've begun to think of addiction as a chemical problem.
Right.
Because we know that most addictive substances, in fact, some writers say all addictive substances, affect the pleasure systems of the brain, which involve dopamine. Mm-hmm. Everybody's heard of dopamine. And it's that pleasurable feeling that people are seeking.
Right.
And that's why people become addicted,
right,
is they're seeking this pleasure.
And in fact, that has become such a main part of, such a significant part of mainstream media and belief. You know, there are those now who say that, well, anything that triggers that reward system is an addiction.
Exactly. We talked about it last week.
Of an exaggeration.
Right. That you could, if that's the definition you use, then you could be addicted to anything.
Right.
And is a person addicted to exercise, or are you addicted to running, or are you addicted to, we loosely say, yeah, he's addicted to running.
Mm-hmm.
But we're really not talking about addiction.
Right.
Okay, and so, and even in the DSM-5, the latest edition, it's called a substance abuse disorder, not an addiction. I mean, that term isn't even in DSM-5
in the diagnostics,
right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the idea here is that, and I think that, you know, in my mind, I want to relate it to some of the things that we talked about last week as it relates to video games and things like that, because, again, yes, video games may trigger the reward centers of the brain. Yes, people may be really driven to do it. But it, to me, is very interesting to think about perhaps video games as a social construct, that, you know, people are really drawn to video games and drawn to some of these things because of the social aspect of, or at least the illusion of social, of a social aspect to it.
So it's the social connection
because a lot
that draws people to video games
for many people, you know, a lot of teenagers, especially, and kids and teenagers play online now, you know, so
that's
they're interacting with other people. You know, there is a pocket of people who still plays, you know, solo, you know, mission based and things like that, but there are many people who play online, and so there is this interactive component to it, and so, but so it kind of supports this notion that, you know, some of these things that we're drawn to do, you know, maybe there may be a social aspect to them.
Right. That's right. When I think of drinking, you know, I think of people who go to bars to drink. I mean, family members, I remember, would go to a particular bar, sit in the same stool. There was a TV show, Cheers. That was a social club for those.
Right.
They were drinking, yes, but it was more of a, that's where they gathered.
Right.
To connect with each other, okay?
Yeah, somebody walks in, everybody calls their name.
Hey, Norm, hey, you know. So it was a social connection mm-hmm. that those people had. It wasn't so much that they were drinking, it's that they mm-hmm. were spending time together. And that's what this this article is about. Interestingly, it reminded me of an article that we talked about. It may have been a year ago now, that soldiers in Vietnam, during the Vietnam War, mm-hmm. would go to Vietnam,
yeah.
and they would start to use drugs while they were there. Right. Marijuana and hash. Mm-hmm. They would even use heroin.
Mm-hmm.
But when they came back, they just stopped using.
Mm-hmm.
They would use for a year
right.
while they were in combat, because a tour of duty was a year. They would come back and never use them again.
Right.
And it got people to thinking that, well, wait a minute, if you get addicted,
right.
it shouldn't be that easy to stop. But there's very little literature on this issue of why people who use drugs, including heroin, don't continue their addiction if it's so addictive. You know, we see right. these movies where, you know, somebody gets captured and they're turned into a drug addict mm-hmm. by injecting them with heroin. You know, they're a lifetime. That may not be true.
Right.
You know? And so these findings, these discoveries, began to lead us into some new directions.
Mm-hmm, right? mm-hmm.
So that's what this is about.
Yeah, and so in the article, as we were getting through some of this stuff, one of the first things that they talk about is this study that they entitled The Rat Park. And The Rat Park is a very interesting study. And they're, you know, saying it up front, there are some methodological and interpretation right. issues with mm-hmm. this study. But the study was done a number of years ago, right. in the 1970s.
Right.
And basically what they did, for a long time, research in substances, substance use and substance abuse, was done in animal models, and they right. would, you know, have rats, say, in isolated mm-hmm. cages, and they would recognize that, you know, rats would tend to, you know, choose substance enhanced water, you right. know, so cocaine or heroin or right. something like that. Rats would choose that over food,
everything
over everything else,
and that right. Mm-hmm.
To the point where they would overdose and
they would die,
and they would die of starvation,
right?
Because they would continue to choose the water with the substance in it.
We taught it as a classic study on substance right. abuse when we taught brain physiology,
mm-hmm.
And to graduate students, it was we all taught this study,
right?
That rats would go in there and they would keep going back to it over and over mm-hmm. and over again to the point of exhaustion and even death.
Right.
They would just keep pressing the bar at the expense of everything else.
Right.
And in fact, they would do it until they died, which was interpreted to mean these are highly addictive substances right. that we will do anything and right. we will give up anything to get.
Right.
Now, technically, that's the definition of addiction, is you'll do right. anything, even suffer the consequences to still get it. So it seemed, it had this intuitive appeal that,
right.
oh, these chemicals are so strong that we can't move away from them.
Right.
So, but then there was a follow-up study.
Right.
That's where Rat Park comes in.
Right. And so then they created this cage that was much larger
right.
than the cage, like 200 times larger mm-hmm. than the typical cage that they would keep the rat in. And they would put the rat in there. And there'd be all, I mean, it'd be like the way that we were always, it was always described to us. It was like a rat amusement park. There's
right.
all these
That's
things
right.
for it to climb on.
Central plenty park of, for rats.
Right. You plenty know. Of food of different varieties right. and things like
But there were
like
things
that.
To play with. They had right. other companionship. There were other rats in there.
Right. A few, mm-hmm. Yeah, a few other rats
right.
and things like that. And there was, but they still had access to the substance.
Still had the addictive substance in there
right.
that they could have chosen at any time.
And they didn't choose it.
And that even those who had been addicted,
right.
when they were put in that environment, moved away from the addictive
right.
substance and to these other activities.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So because of, you know, they're in this much larger setting, there's right. many more activities, there's many more things to do, and there's up to 19 other rats, and
things
they're
to do,
of both
people
genders.
To see.
Right,
right.
The rats chose not to use the substance,
right. Right.
And so this, of course, really started to raise the question: wait a minute, if this is such a highly addictive thing, if it is such a chemical, purely chemical based issue,
right.
why is that? Why would they choose right. not to use it.
And you hearken back to the Vietnam study. Right. Why did these guys use this stuff for a year and then said, just turn their back on it after they got back?
Okay. Right.
What's going on that most people, you know, only 10% of the population gets addicted,
right,
approximately.
Right.
Why don't the rest of us get addicted? Mm-hmm. For years, marijuana was called a gateway drug.
Right.
It is. But only for those who go on.
For a portion of, yeah.
It's not a gateway drug for the vast majority of teenagers who use it. Mm-hmm. They don't go on to other drugs.
Right.
So it's not a gateway drug for the vast majority of people who use it.
Right.
It's a gateway drug for those who go on.
Right.
But that's a small sliver of the entire population.
Right. So if we pull, sort of step back from Rat Park, mm-hmm. and we look at human studies,
right,
you know, there are, as you said, the Vietnam study and some other things, there are other studies to suggest that when a person has good social connections, good social relationships, good attachments to other people, mm-hmm. their risk and their tendency towards substance use,
right,
and addiction,
right,
decreases significantly.
That's right. And we know, we go all the way back to Bowlby's studies,
right,
in England. Who was the first to say that those who have a secure attachment, children
right.
who have a secure attachment, tend to turn out
right.
To be more healthy as adults.
Mm-hmm.
There's less aggression. There's less of all the negative consequences. And so, but it begins with that secure attachment.
Right.
Eric Erickson told us that
yeah.
before John Bowlby did, that
right.
those first 2 or 3 years of life, you have to establish these secure attachments mm-hmm. and things tend to go better.
Right.
If you don't have secure attachments, things don't go as well,
right.
generally speaking.
Right.
So it may be that we have an at-risk population mm-hmm. for addiction
right.
beginning with early attachment.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the theme of this week, again,
right.
has to do with creating connections mm-hmm. and you know, interacting with others and, you know, sort of expanding beyond this just social media as mm-hmm. as a mm-hmm. way to interact with others and doing
right.
so more personally. And here we have a set of conditions,
right.
a set of disorders, if we call it that,
mm-hmm.
Substance abuse disorders, where that we tend to think of purely as chemical, purely as, you
right.
know, if you use that, it's going to turn on certain areas of your brain that's going to make you continue to use that, and that's it.
And you're going to be helpless. You're not
right.
going to be able to do anything about it. It's just going to take over your life.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, there's adequate research to suggest that
right.
having good social connections could likely reduce the risk of substance abuse.
It's a protective factor.
And if you think mm-hmm. about the treatments, I mean, one of the most common treatments for substance abuse disorders is like the 12-step programs.
Right.
What do the 12-step programs require? You go to meet, well, require, quote unquote, require. You go to meet.
That's what
meetings.
It's about. You go to meetings and
you have a sponsor.
Right.
So
and
we,
I that. Always thought, but before I studied all this stuff, I thought, well, you go to meetings to, you know, the reason you go to meetings is to stay connected to people.
Right.
The meeting is a place where it's like Cheers.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
For alcoholics.
Absolutely.
It's the place you go. You also have a mentor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a sponsor.
Sponsor. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the sponsor is always available. So,
right.
They surround you with other people. They
mm-hmm.
surround you with connections.
Right.
That's the strength of one of the strengths of the AA program.
And it's also what makes it so difficult for some people because, when they're dealing with addiction issues, because, you know, if the people that they tended to spend time with before
right.
were substance users, and you say, okay, you got to stay away from those people,
mm-hmm.
and then they pull away from those people, if they don't have anyone else to connect to,
exactly,
then they're at risk.
You're sending them in exactly the wrong direction.
Right.
You're taking away the I don't want to call it their supports because it's also the problem.
Right.
I mean, they're
right.
other users.
Right.
And
you have to give them some other supports.
Right, but they have
right.
to go someplace. Interestingly, Portugal, you know, is the great experiment
mm-hmm.
now that everybody's talking about because Portugal decriminalized mm-hmm. illegal drugs
right.
in 2001, and people thought this would be the end of Portugal.
Right.
Well, as it turned out to be a positive thing
right.
because their substance abuse problems have dramatically declined.
Mm-hmm.
Their prison population has dramatically declined. And they're using pro-social methods mm-hmm. to help people who are right. who have a history of abuse right. And addiction. And it's working out really well in Portugal.
Well, I think that, you know, tying this topic in with something that we've talked about over the last couple of days, with the significant increase in social media,
right.
with the fact that teenagers, young adults have surpassed the elderly in reports of feeling disconnected and right. feeling alone mm-hmm. and feeling isolated.
Right.
It's no wonder that we're seeing continuing to see increases right. in substance use in teens and mm-hmm. young adults
right.
because they don't feel that connection. They don't feel those social bonds the way that, you know, the way that most of us did when we were growing up.
And speaking of teenagers,
mm-hmm.
So parents of a teenager find their child is using drugs and alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
What's one of the things that they do? They ground the child.
Put them on lockdown.
That's right. Take yeah. your phone, put you on lockdown. Again, we're going in exactly the opposite direction. Right. If you're concerned about your child becoming addicted, which is different from experimenting,
right.
The worst thing you can do is isolate that child. I had an individual that I dealt with a few years ago, teenager, and that's what his parents did. He spent a year in homeschooling, and mm-hmm, mm-hmm. he was completely isolated. He's never recovered.
Right.
I mean, he has continued to struggle, and I'm convinced it's because he's been so isolated right. at this time of his life when he should have been so social.
Right. Yeah, and we're certainly not saying, you know, let the teenager continue to no. interact with those that are,
no.
you know, fostering their substance use. But at the same time, you know, a lot of times, teenagers who gravitate towards those who abuse substances are doing so because they don't have the skills, or they don't have the access, or they don't mm-hmm. have the connections to more pro-social
That's right.
peers mm-hmm. in the first place. And so we need to do something to get those connections present.
And one of the things I would advise any parent or any partner to do, you begin at home.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the first social connection that a child needs is with the nuclear family.
Right.
You know, what can the family do
right.
to make this person feel connected? We all have plenty of patients who, teenagers, whose families appear to be supportive. They appear to be involved, but in fact, the child might feel disconnected.
Right.
So I think we need to look at all those things. I think this whole idea of connection
mm-hmm.
is worth some time and effort.
Right, you know? Right. So. All right, that is...
Take a look at that. And also, look at the TED Talk.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm going to do that later today.
Yeah, check out the link to the articles in the show notes. It's very well written.
Yeah, very, it's very good.
So, mm-hmm. All right, until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid. Thanks for sharing this episode of the Mental Breakdown and PsychReg podcast. Be sure to check out the show notes for links to follow us on Twitter and subscribe to our YouTube channel, where you'll find all of our previous podcasts and much more. We'd be honored if you would become a patron through patreon.com, where any donation you can manage will go to the development and creation of more content. Just visit patreon.com/themental breakdown for more information. Thanks again for listening. Have an awesome day, and we look forward to being back in your feed tomorrow morning.